Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Well, during the last 3 months, we've had a lot of interviews from South America and a lot that have been translated. And I hope that for those of you who are English speakers, that you really understand the magic of interpretation and translation. It's made for me, a whole world of communication open up in a way that it has been very, very important for me, because I feel that each culture and each language group gives to our Reiki community something different, a quality that's very special. And this month we're going to kind of have a mix of different people from around the world, again, opening up the scope of the Reiki community to the wider world. And today we have with us Lynn Armour. I first met Lynn when she lived near Toronto, Canada. And since then, which has been in the late 1990s, she's been traveling around the world and doing lots of different things, having great adventures. And she just happens to be on another adventure, which I haven't heard the whole story about. She's beginning a trip for a year, I understand, in a camper, and traveling around the United States. So luckily, I get to see her in a few days, but before this happens, I thought we would do our interview. So, Lynn, welcome very much to the show, and thank you for doing this.
Thank you. I'm excited, and I'm looking forward to the interview.
Great. Well, as always, I would love for you to share your Reiki story. I know that it started a long time ago, so to speak, and it feels like in our relationship, there have been several lifetimes that have passed since the beginning of your Reiki journey. So could you tell us about them?
That's very, very true. In 1986, I experienced without realizing I was receiving Reiki. I'd had many miscarriages, 10 in fact, and really wanted a child, so I was sent to a specialist, a doctor, and the only difference in what she did or any of the other doctors did was to put her hands on me once a week on my stomach and do her doctor sounds, and say, you're going to be fine and we'll see you next week. And she would do that for about 15 or 20 minutes once a week. I found out after I actually was introduced to Reiki and started practicing Reiki that she was trained by the same master teacher that trained me.
Uh-huh.
So that was kind of exciting to find out later. However, I did have a wonderful, beautiful 9-pound baby boy, and I really contribute that to the Reiki that I was receiving, you know, during the whole pregnancy, because nothing else that she did was any different from any other doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And so my story goes on to about October 1986, when my son was about 6 months old, and he had been experiencing colic for, you know, all day and all night, and he would scream constantly and maybe sleep 2 or 3 half-hour sessions. And so by the time he was 6 months old, I was ready to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And it was really a struggle because, you know, I tried so hard to have this child, and now it was just, you know, like a living, like a very bad experience. So
right.
So I ran across in a health food store a little bulletin that said Japanese healing technique. And I thought, gee, I wonder whether this would work, because I had been trying other things and nothing seemed to be helping. And I phoned up the organizer and I said, all I want to know is, does this stuff cure colic? and she must have heard the desperation in my voice, because she said, yes. So I went to this class, and at that time in my life, my only understanding of of spirituality in any form was either some religious dogma or some kind of cult. So I arrived at this information session, and it was in the basement of a home, and there were about 30 people there, and there was this, you know, table up at the front that had candles, and there was these two ladies dressed in kind of robey kind of outfits, and I thought, oh my God, I've stepped into a cult. So I sat close to the door expecting that if it got too weird, I could run.
Mm-hmm. Good plan. And,
yeah, good plan. So I listened to the story and the introduction of Reiki, and the two ladies were Bunny Shukran and Jane Booty. And so I listened to their story, and at the break, where we had to make the commitment to take the class, I came up to them and I said to Bunny, well, this is your colic. And she looked me in the eyes and she said, there's a possibility. And that was good enough. I decided to stay through the weirdness and receive my first initiation. And there was a lot of talk about, self-growth and personal growth and doing the self-treatment thing. And I wasn't the least bit interested in any of that. I just wanted to hear college. I wanted to get a good night's sleep.
Right.
So I went home and the screaming child was handed to me and I put my hand on his stomach and he immediately got this surprised look on his face and got quiet. And it was like, wow, this is good. And then a few minutes later, he fell asleep.
Wow, that's amazing.
I know, I was amazed. So I laid him down in his bed thinking, okay, I've got a half an hour. Because that's about all he ever used to sleep. And I laid down on the sofa thinking, okay, now I can, get a half an hour's rest. Well, the next thing I knew, I woke up in the morning with the sun shining on my face. And my first thought was, oh, my God, I killed my child. So I went running into his bedroom, and there he was, still sleeping.
Wow.
So the sitter arrived, and she said, where is he? And I said, oh, he's sleeping. She said, oh, but I got a half hour. I said, no, you don't understand. He slept through the night, and we are not waking him up. He can sleep for 4 days. I'm not waking him up. So I went back to the class, and I don't remember much of the rest of the class. I was just so thrilled that I had this opportunity to, help him with the colic.
Uh-huh.
And then in retrospect, every time I treated him, the colic would stop. And about 2 weeks later, I discovered a very interesting thing about Reiki. And that was that it doesn't just deal with the surface symptom. It eventually gets down to the cause of the problem.
Right.
Because a couple weeks later, he started to choke. And he eventually choked up a little round ball that bounced on the floor. And I picked it up and I cut it open. It was congealed formula that must have been in his stomach from the time he was, put on formula. Because that's about when the colic started. So after that, no more colic. He was done. He coughed this thing up and he was fine.
That is unbelievable. Amazing.
So I was thrilled. Now I thought, okay, that pays for the class. I never thought I would ever do Reiki again. It was, I took it to cure the colic and the colic was done. So that was like good. And then about 2 months later, when he was about 8 months old, he was, already walking from furniture to furniture, and he tripped on the carpet and he hit his forehead on a table and opened it up. And there was blood all over the place. And I just did a mother thing. I grabbed him, I put my hand on his forehead, and my friend went and got a wet cloth to see if we needed to take him into the hospital for stitches. And by the time she got back and we cleaned his face all up and cleaned all the blood off, all there was a little pink line on his forehead, and in 2 minutes it was gone.
Wow.
And I was in shock. It scared the tar out of me. because I didn't have any context to put that in. And she was of a religious belief that if you didn't call on a certain power, it was the work of the bad guys. So she headed for the hills. I never saw her again. And I didn't have anybody to talk to. So I tried to get a hold of the person who sponsored the class, and that person wasn't available. And I tried to get a hold of Buddy, and she wasn't available. And so here I was with this weird thing that happened, and I didn't know what to do.
Right.
So I wasn't going to touch nothing. I wasn't touching anything. And a couple months later, moved from Calgary, where all this has happened, to Ottawa in eastern Canada. And a couple months after I was in eastern Canada, my husband got an opportunity to go back to Calgary. So I went with him, and I tried again to get a hold of these people who sponsored the class. And they said, oh, you're lucky. The Reiki master's here this week. And that was just like a scary coincidence. And she was there the week I was there. So I talked to her, and I told her about the experience. And she said, oh, don't worry. Sometimes these things happen. And I remember, so I don't even remember how it happened, but I took my second level at that point in time. And she took her, my husband took his first level. And then we went back to Ottawa, and we started doing treatments on each other. And that's when I actually started doing self-treatment. And I have not had a day since then where I haven't done a self-treatment.
Wonderful. And how long ago was that? 1980-something?
It would have been June of 1987.
Wow. That's incredible.
So, and it has any time I get a tiny ache or a pain or anything. Hands go on and the Reiki's there. I just love it. And so we got bored with just working on each other. So we called Bunny up and said, would you come to Ottawa and teach some classes? And so she said, sure. So I started holding. I mean, I knew very little about Reiki, but I started holding information sessions and talking about it and renting space in the library. And, you know, eventually we had a class together. And then Bunny and Jane kept coming out for classes for quite some time, several years. And so there was a large group gathering around my home, and we started doing group treatments, and we started doing, you know, gatherings and those kinds of things. And people started to say to me, well, when are you going to become a Reiki master? And I said, never. I have no intentions of going further with this. Besides, I mean, anybody who would spend $10,000 on who knows what is going to be crazy. Because I had no idea of the involvement. I just had no idea of what to expect.
Uh-huh.
And so after a few years of that, I had a really intense dream one night, and I woke up knowing that I had to be a Reiki master. And so I rolled over and told my husband, he said, you what? Where do you think we're going to get the money? And I said, I have no idea. You know, we were living paycheck to paycheck. We had no concept of coming up with that kind of money. Uh-huh. So I, but I went down and I called Bunny, or at least the number that she'd given me, because she was on a sailing ship off the coast of New Zealand at the time, or Australia. And to leave a message for her. And to tell her that I had to be. And she said, she answered the phone, which shocked me. And she said, I had a funny feeling you'd call today, so we came in. I was like, what? You know, I said to her, well, I have to be a Reiki master. And she said, yeah, I know. And I said, well, I have to be. And she said, yes. And then the next thing she said to me is, how are you going to pay for it? And I said, you know, I have no idea at all, but I know I have to do this, so somehow it's going to happen. And so I began several years of training, and it was a lot of up and down and a lot of emotional stuff and a lot of clearing and a lot of growth. And, you know, I found her to be a pretty intense, amazing teacher. And, you know, over the several years, I realized that, you know, I totally understood where the $10,000 was.
Right.
With the time and dedication she gave me, and still does, all these years later, it has been absolutely remarkable. She was a really tough taskmaster, and she really pushed me through my stuff. Not that we always don't have more, but she did a really good job of pushing me. And in April of 1991, she finally initiated me as the Reiki Master. And I think that's actually, Phyllis, when I first met you, because I went to I went to a conference in New York State. It was my first conference just a few months after I had been initiated as a master.
Oh, wow. Right.
So then life just kind of bubbled on. I've been invited to many, many different places over the years to teach. I was invited in 91 that year to start teaching in the Caribbean, and mainly in Trinidad. And I taught there for a while, and then moved my teaching from there to Barbados, and have been teaching there about twice a year since 1991. I moved to Barbados in 1995. And there's an amazingly wonderful group of people there. And since then, I mean, the Caribbean had not heard of Reiki until I started teaching there. And it just spread all over the Caribbean. And 3 years ago, three or four years ago, they had their first international Caribbean conference. And it was absolutely wonderful. And I got invited to be a guest speaker, and I was in shock at the people there who, when they were asked to trace their lineage back, the several hundred people in that room, all traced their lineage back to me, and then Bunny, and then you, of course. And I was flabbergasted and shocked. It had me in tears. So, I mean, it was a beautiful conference. It was nice to see. I've been doing teaching work in South Africa as well. I became a master teacher with an ancient metaphysical school for a couple of years, and was on their leadership council. And they had me teaching Reiki through the school. And it was through them that I was asked to come to Japan. And that was in 2002. So in 2002, I moved to Japan and decided I would try to do what many people had been doing around that point in time, was trying to connect to the things that brought this amazing teaching to the Western world. Mm-hmm. And so I met several people, because I was teaching through this school, the Western Reiki. And I have had so many, you know, miracles happen along the way, and I'll skip back to that in a bit. But while I was in Japan, I met and studied for a little while with a man named, Inamoto. And he claimed that he was teaching the original Reiki, and that he had studied with Chiyoko Yamaguchi, who was the last living teacher of Hayashi Sensei. So I studied with him, but even though he was an amazingly wonderful, huge-hearted, loving Buddhist monk, very jolly, very happy, amazingly good energy, I realized very quickly that whatever he had learned, he had mixed it up with some other forms of Western Reiki, because it went from simple to very complicated.
Uh-huh.
And I just went, no, this can't be the source. This can't be. Although I appreciated a lot of the information I received from him, but information doesn't make for usability. It's just information. So I've always had this deep, deep yearning inside of me to understand the healing process, to understand why miracles happen sometimes and not all the time.
Uh-huh.
And because I've had them over and over and over again. I've had, you know, tumors that I could feel vanish instantly underneath my hands. With my son, there were several other instances where he cut himself. And, you know, in one instance when he was two, he tore his nose, the side of his nose off, tripping on a toy box. And again, there was this flap, and I just put it back, and I put my hand on it, and in a matter of 10 or 15 minutes, you'd never know when it was torn. You know, so there, you know, I've had these kinds of experiences over and over and over again. And I have tried to capture what it is that happened in those moments. And so I wanted to understand what it is within me that could facilitate me being a better channel,
mm-hmm.
that could facilitate me allowing this amazing energy of what I call source. There's just no other way to describe this energy. What within me would make it flow more clearly, more strongly, better? So that's kind of been a quest of mine. And it's not so much been a quest of information as a quest of, okay, how do I do this?
Uh-huh.
So I didn't find that with the first person I met in Japan. And then I met a man named Doi. And I found that he had mixed up. He had studied with Asui's original organization, which I had a connection to when I moved to Japan. It took me a long time to connect with them, about 6 months before they even see me. But Doi studied his first and second level with Asui's organization, and then went off to, because they wouldn't train him as a master teacher, he went off and studied other forms of Western Reiki, and so was practicing that. But my energy did not, again, mesh very well with his. So I was kind of sitting out there wondering, you know, where to go next. And then there was a man with the mystery school by the name of Hideto Nakagome, who said, have you ever had any experience with Jigen Reiki? And I said, well, no, I've been, you know, searching, and I've been trying to find and been trying to understand. And so he introduced me to Tadeo Yamaguchi. And through him, I received, they call the first degree Shoden, and so I received that training from him. And they call the second degree Ukoden, and I received that training from him. And then I went on to study with Tadeo Yamaguchi for the teacher's training. And the one thing that I discovered with the Japanese form was a wonderful, beautiful difference between Western and Eastern culture. And so as I got deeper into Jikiden Reiki, I more and more appreciated what Hawaii Takara had done for the Western world. That amazing woman took something that was totally foreign to the Western world at a time where it would not have been accepted. and kept the essence so that it could be spread to the Western world, and did things to help it spread to the Western world. And I think that is absolutely amazing and remarkable, because I wouldn't be here today if she hadn't have.
Right.
And so the Western world, and I find, is very undisciplined.
Yes.
And very, I don't care if it's been done for 1,000 years, I can do it better. And very creative.
Very what?
Creative. Creative.
Creative, uh-huh.
Yes. And there are some good sides and some bad sides to that.
Yes.
Because the ego gets involved, and then it, in its will to do better or make better or improve better, I think it loses some of the essence.
Uh-huh.
But it allows one to expand somewhat outside the box. In Japanese Reiki, the Jikiden Reiki, there's a very clearly defined box. And that box can serve a wonderful purpose in helping us to focus with this energy. Although boxes can tend to also be very limiting to get to a certain place. So the downside of that is it's limiting. But the discipline and focus that's required when doing a Japanese Reiki has, and the form of initiation they use, which is different from what I experienced in my Western Reiki, for me, it was like it was the icing on the cake. It allowed me to it allowed me to stay more centered. It allowed me to experience the energy without mind. It, because the focus is, in Jikiden Reiki, there are many fewer hand positions, but you hold each of those hand positions for 20 minutes. And the Western mind is not very well trained to do anything for 20 minutes, let alone 5. And I found that with the Eastern discipline, it trained my mind to be able to just observe. And observe and just be with the energy and observe what the energy was doing, rather than having any preconceived ideas of what else I could do. I have a huge bag of tricks. I'm a trained naturopath, I'm a herbalist, I'm a nutritionist, and on and on and on. And it's easy for me to go, oh, you know, this spot is pulling in energy, so I should recommend A, B, C, and D. Or this spot is pulling in energy, and I should recommend, you know, C, D, and F. And the Japanese practice forced me to not do that, to just totally be in the Reiki energy in the moment. And the more disciplined I get with that, in just from an observation perspective, oh, isn't that interesting perspective, the miracles that I experienced in the past have, you know, increased. And so the gift was this sense of discipline. And so I felt much more connected not only to the energy but to the earth. Because one of the focuses of the Eastern Reiki is that we are bringing in energy from the heavens, and we are bringing in energy from the earth, which comes from the heavens, but through the earth, and we are mixing that together within us, and it's going into our heart space, and then it's coming out. And so the key that I have found for myself, anyway, is that having that heart space totally open and vulnerable, which most of us have difficulty doing, is what creates those miracles. And so the discipline that I found in Eastern Reiki is actually helping me in being much more open so that the energy can flow stronger. And as a result, that are happening at the other end are much more remarkable. Because it's never been good enough for me for people just to relax and fall asleep on the table. You could put most people on a nice soft, a nice table and put a blanket over them and get them really comfortable and put some soft music on and go stand, you know, if they trust you, go stand in the corner on your head, and a lot of them are going to get better. And they're going to relax. So for me, if that's all that Reiki is doing, it's not good enough. What I want to see is healing. And I had an opportunity to meet Chiyoko Yamaguchi, Tadeo's mother, who practiced Reiki for 55 years. And she, pretty remarkable woman. And the stories that she shared and that her son shared were just about that. It was about you just keep doing it until the healing happens. And you keep doing it with no expectation. And that's really tough. That is a very difficult thing to do, is to offer this energy so the person can use it in the way that they need to use it without any expectation that they need to get better. Especially when I want results.
Right.
So, yeah, do you have any questions?
Oh, scads. let's see, we can stop there, I guess. Well, at least not stop, but long story. Let's see, where to begin? Well, let's start from the very recent. So one of the things that is interesting is that you, in your story, you've come around to what I feel like is the, is one of the core principles of how Hawaii Otakata taught, which is have no expectations, allow your hands to stay in one place for, you know, hours if that's what your hands want to do.
Right.
And how to get there is to do the beginning practice until your hands become very sensitive, and then you can follow your hands. So it just feels like, in principle, there's been a wonderful, in all your searching.
Come back to the beginning.
Come back to the beginning, which is really sweet. And I just love your motivation and your willingness to share with us very candidly your motivation and how things are very somewhat on the physical level, but there's a depth to what you're saying that also gives credence to the other part of being involved in a Reiki practice, which is, well, I mean, for want of a better word, I call it the spiritual practice, or all the other unseen parts of ourselves that are involved in healing, bringing us to a wholeness. So I hear that in your story also. And I don't know. I guess some of my questions might be pragmatic, but I'm wondering if my impression feels like what you wanted, what you experienced, I guess.
Just to pause here, my battery seems to be getting low, and I'm not plugged in. So I'm not sure where this is going to go, but I'll keep talking. This has brought me, in my own personal life, to an absolutely amazing place. On all levels of my life. There are things about my life that I can't even... There just simply are not words for the growth, the experiences. I've always believed that, you know, health isn't just about where we are physically. It's about where we are mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And, you know, if you can wake up in the morning and go, wow, another day, you're healthy. You're well. You're living the life you're supposed to live. And so that's another part of what I, you know, look for with my... with the people I work with, and the people that I'm helping. And it's the part that helps me to work with myself, become a better person. Because every class I teach, every initiation I do, every treatment I do on myself and on others is just one more step to reaching, you know, the potential that I believe we all have. So I'm excited about it. And, you know, it's out of everything else that I do, it is the source, it is the core.
Well, then I'd like to now take a little turn back to the big, to a, not the beginning of your story, but somewhere in the middle, where you were called to go to Japan. And I say called, meaning all the events in the universe happened to come together to get you to Japan, and not just for a week, but for a couple of years. So I'm just wondering these pragmatic questions like, did you learn Japanese? Did you have an interpreter? Where did you live? How did you find where to live? And all those kinds of questions. So we'll start with the pragmatic.
Well, the universe is a very blessed place, and when you are supposed to be doing something, everything comes together.
Yep.
So I, at least that's my current belief system. I had no idea of that 30 years ago, but today it's very clear. So I had 6 months prior to deciding to move to Japan, had left a 20-year marriage, had sold my 15-year naturopathic practice, was leaving the farm that I had that was where I raised organic herbs and vegetables and goats and chickens, and leaving the apprentices that I was working with, and decided it was time for change. Initially, I was planning on moving back to Calgary and to kind of start over there. But there is never really any going back, as I have learned. So
that's true, actually. I've tried that a couple of times. It definitely doesn't work.
Nope. When you're done, you're done. Anyway.
Right.
So I, as I said briefly earlier, I was beginning to work with a ancient metaphysical school, and they invited me in August of 2002 to come and teach in Japan. They wanted me to teach herbal medicine. They wanted me to teach the type of shamanic teaching that I teach, and they wanted me to teach Reiki.
Now, so, excuse me, I'm sorry. Just a little digression. So when you said an ancient, what did you call it, an ancient school?
Metaphysical mystery school.
A metaphysical mystery school. So, what's that?
That could be another whole very long discussion.
Right. And when you said ancient, that brings me to mind of thousands of years. So I'm just trying to figure
it has out. A 3,000-year-old lineage that traces clearly back to King Solomon.
Wow, amazing. Okay. So,
and as I said, that's another whole story. But I was asked in 2002 to come to Japan to teach with this school.
Wow, neat.
Which has become international. And I basically had said to them, you know, in this particular state, I am unable to, I knew the cost of living in Japan, and I discovered that it was important that I actually just maybe travel there and teach. So if they could take me to, you know, sponsor classes and organize the classes, that I would just go and teach and then come back.
Right.
But they actually wanted me to move there.
Uh-huh.
And right around the same time, I began a relationship with a pretty amazing man who very shortly after I was invited to go to Japan, he was invited to run all Asia.
Excuse me, Lynn. I need to interrupt you because the background noise. So I think you were talking about the mystery school?
Yes, I was talking about how I got this invitation to go teach in Japan, and I couldn't, because of the cost of living in Japan, couldn't afford to move there. So I had said, well, if you sponsor classes, then I will come back and I'll teach and then come back to Canada. And
excuse me. Your background noises are still there. It's like paper moving or something like that.
Well, I was invited to Japan to teach and couldn't go.
Yeah.
On a permanent basis because of the cost of living.
Right.
So had intended just to, you know, go and teach and come back and go and teach and come back. And then the man that I was in relationship with, he got a job to take care of all of Asia for the company he was working for.
Wow.
And he told them that him and his wife would have to be part of the package. So we got married. And I moved to Japan, and all of my expenses were taken care of. All my travel expenses were taken care of. I had a beautiful place to live in Tokyo. And so I was there for the 2 years that this contract was with my husband.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, it worked out amazing.
Wow.
Like I said, the universe just set everything up, and he spoke fluent Japanese. So it helped me a lot in the work. And then the school that I was teaching for hired an interpreter to teach the classes with me.
Uh-huh.
So that was a whole wonderful experience all by itself, because I had to learn how to speak in a different way. I had to learn to pause. I had to learn to sense whether the translation was coming through okay.
Yes.
and then if it wasn't and I didn't get the response I expected, then I had to find a different way of saying it.
Right. And
that was a wonderful teaching experience all in of itself.
Exactly. It's true.
And because of our, situation there and having our expenses covered, we were also making extremely good money, and we were able to travel and explore whatever we wanted. So it was very, very amazing and wonderful that the universe set up for me.
Lovely.
So that's how I got to Japan.
And did you learn any Japanese while you were there, just, you know, to say hello or order food or anything?
I learned the basics while I was there, but it's a very difficult language.
It is.
At least for me it was. And, I mean, my husband had been learning Japanese for 15 years and, you know, was considered fairly fluent. So, you know, we got along fine. He translated everything we needed to translate, so it worked out okay. I wished I had spent more time trying to learn the Japanese language, but it did make it easier for me when I studied the Jikidan Reiki, because even though those classes were taught with an interpreter, it was I could still pick up some of the understanding, you know, when I heard the Japanese, so that was nice.
That's great. Wonderful.
And apparently since that time, Tadao Yamaguchi is now traveling internationally. And
yes.
Which he wasn't at the time.
Uh-huh. Great. Let's see. So this brings me to a question about practice. So there's this... there's this assumption, I think, and that, how can I put it? First of all, let's just stick with the practice. There's this assumption, or there seems to be an assumption, maybe this is my personal bias, but there seems to be an assumption that because Mikao Usui was Japanese, and there is the association there in Japan that is, that has as its mission to carry on his work as he taught, as closely as possible, that somehow there's more truth to the Reiki of Japan. And I'm just wondering if that was an attitude you went with, and how did that, what did that change with time and with your teaching? Or I don't know if you know how I'm, what I'm getting at, but it's something that I went there with, and I have a really, I have a story that just totally, taught me what I needed to learn. So I'm just wondering how that was for you.
Well, I never had the attitude that it was going to be better Reiki.
Uh-huh.
I went with an attitude of open self-discovery to see, you know, what was all the fluff about. I was really happy with my Western practice. I was having excellent results. You know, I had a huge clinical practice. Everything was going really well. It was just personally for myself, I wondered if there was anything in the Japanese teaching that would help me go to a deeper place within myself and within my practice.
Uh-huh.
And I really feel that some of the things within the Jikiden Reiki helped me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And when I teach Reiki, I don't teach a blended Reiki. I teach one or the other. I don't, in my personal practice, however, I use some of the things from the Jikiden Reiki to practice the Reiki that I've always practiced. And the main piece of that is the focus and the discipline on just be in observation mode.
Uh-huh.
And I do use, for me, in my Western practice, the self-treatment was a part of, you know, twice a day connecting with the energy for half an hour. And I have substituted in my own private practice one of those self-treatments with what they use in Jikiden, which is a meditation where the precepts are chanted for half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have found both of those amazingly beneficial and helpful to me. So, but I can understand that in the Western world, you know, very few people are going to be interested in or are going to have the discipline to sit, you know, twice a day for half an hour and, or to kneel twice a day for half an hour and chant the precepts. I find the experience to be very powerful, but there's very few people that are in the Western world that are interested, dedicated, and disciplined enough to do that. So it's an interesting concept for many, you know, Western Reiki practitioners, but not one that many people will actually add to their practice. And if it means that they're not going to be connecting for 2.5-hour sessions a day, then it's better off they don't even do it. They just do the self-treatment. So I've really come to this place in my private practice where, for me, it works to do a self-treatment once a day and to do the meditation and chanting of the precepts once a day. But for other people, that might not be practical.
You've come up with, and this is a question from before, and now I remember it again, this idea about what Westerners will and will not do, like, you know, chant the precepts for a certain number of hours, a half an hour, you know, a sitting seiza. I assume that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I think that's an assumption that's, I think it is, I don't know if it's a, it's an assumption, and I don't know really if it's correct. I think that it's an interesting process to, to introduce. And so for me, what happens with some of my students who have, you know, been exposed to what we might call the Japanese practice of Reiki, what's interesting for me is that when we first learn Reiki, it seems like there's this little package that gets put inside of us called Reiki. And to add something to that takes a lot of readjustment. And I feel like some of the people have done this without the benefit of understanding how to hold different forms of practice in the same discipline. So if we call Reiki a discipline, like Buddhism is not a discipline, but Buddhism is a field that it has, there are many, many different sects of Buddhism. And you can, a Buddhist could study all these, several different sects, but they might have, they might see the value or the benefit of some of the processes of the one that they don't call their home. Does this make sense to you?
Yes, exactly.
And I think that, you know, in the Western world, we don't have this concept that you can hold two things and not have them be compromised. And that is, you know, a huge step, because it's usually we're into good and bad, either or, right or wrong. You know, there's always, it's hard to hold two different concepts of the same thing. That's all.
Yes, I would totally agree with that. So, you know, I should probably rephrase it and say, not that they won't do it, that they would have difficulty doing it.
Right, right. And I find some of the people that I've talked to have tried it, and some really enjoy it and some don't. And I know that there are people in my own practice, my own students, who have said, well, I'm not going to do that because that just doesn't work for me. And, you know, one of the things that I find about Reiki is that it really moves people to different levels at different times when they're ready. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate that you got to go over there at a time where it felt like the right time for you and your life.
It was perfect timing.
And that it gave you so much. And I'm really pleased, because you and I haven't actually talked about this directly since you've been back. And it's wonderful to hear it directly from you, in the sense that I really get how it fit into your whole life. And that's really sweet. So again, Reiki has given you this incredible gift.
Oh, it's an amazing gift. And when I really stop and just think about the level of the gift, I'm overwhelmed. And so to have the ability to pass this gift on to somebody else, and just watch them bloom and grow and develop into the magnificent being that they are, it amazes me and flabbergasts me.
Uh-huh. So I have another question in this, and that is connected, but only to clarify something that you said, in that you said, well, I wanted something more than somebody just lying on the table and going to sleep and having a nice, relaxing experience. My experiences are sometimes those relaxing moments, i.e. when your son as an infant just fell asleep, are very potent healing experiences. So I just want to be clear about your message that you wanted to put out at that moment.
I have seen people experience some pretty amazing positive changes while they've relaxed and fallen asleep, and they may not have realized it until several days later or some time later.
Right.
But I guess it comes from my own personal prejudice, where I have, you know, seen a huge focus on Reiki just being that, just relax and sleep. And in many of the experiences that many people have with Reiki, and for me it's kind of like, but that's only the beginning. It's not the full potential of this amazing experience. And so I guess I kind of feel like, I don't know, I kind of wish that everybody would understand the depth of the shift that can happen when they receive a Reiki treatment. And it's not just about relaxing.
Right. Yes, I think that's a, well, what can we call it? An admirable, Phyllis, come on, I missed a word. It's a good thing to focus on, Lynn. And I'm wondering, I wonder about your background of your natural medicines and so on. And so then we get into this very interesting question about healing and curing. And, and I, you know, when I was in South America, we had these wonderful, I had these wonderful series of, one day workshops, one of the topics was, how can we define healing and curing in Reiki? And it was a wonderful discussion, really beautiful.
I wish I would have been there.
Yeah. Well, maybe we can do it some other time here in the United States or someplace. But it was really, really a neat conversation to have with people. And one of the things I wondered about is, in Japan, what is the focus of Reiki in Japan? Like, so for some people here, they do tamp it down, I think, sometimes because they're afraid of the church or they're afraid of the medical community or whatever. So they, you know, put it out as a relaxation technique or something like that, which, you know, I agree with you, is a bit misleading for people, because they think that it's only about relaxation. And of course, if you relax, there's a lot of healing that tumbles onto that, but it's kind of sad to find it as an accident rather than a focus.
Right.
Right. And so I agree with you on that score. And then I just wonder, in Japan, is it really so geared toward what we might call healing in a holistic sense or curing in a medical sense?
Well, the Japanese practice is really focused on the curing, from at least the Jikidan perspective that I've experienced. And yet, there is quiet discussion in the background about people living the fullest life they can live. So, you know, it's like saying there is more than just this physical healing, but they don't really spend much time acknowledging it.
Really?
No.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah, the Jikidan practice is focused on, you know, got a problem, fix a problem.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they do, in their Ukuden level, they do focus very strongly on what we call, you know, the mental healing.
Right.
But in a very different way. It's none of this subconscious anything stuff. It's just, you know, this problem, blah, 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 no longer serves you. Eliminate it immediately.
Right.
You know, it's very direct. It's very straightforward. And actually, I've had much better results with it.
Well, that's how Hawaii Ojikata taught it.
But yes, I understand that. But it's morphed into something very different. At least when I was taught it through my teacher, there was a lot of focus on affirmations and positive thinking and wording things correctly and all those kinds of things. I took an immense amount of training in that particular aspect. But this is just, you know, it's not good for you, just stop doing it.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, it's interesting because I feel that this is part of our, how to say this without being judgmental or weird about it, but this is the difference in the cultures, really, because for the Japanese, it's like, well, if you don't like it, then change it.
Right.
Or, you know, if you want to lose weight, then stop eating. it's just a kind of pragmatic simplicity that is so fascinating because, as I said, being Japanese and not Japanese, I end up in these really crazy situations sometimes. And this is one of them. It's like people were afraid to be so – a lot of my students have been afraid to be so straightforward. So they end up, you know, complicating it by the affirmation approach or something like that. So – and that part's really interesting.
It took me quite some time to get comfortable with just get over it attitude.
Right.
But it works really, really well, and now I really like it.
Oh, great. Wonderful. Well, I have, because of this kind of broken up recording, I have no idea what kind of timeline we're in, but I think we're in toward the end.
It feels like about an hour.
Yeah, and a good hour, actually.
Yes.
So I have one more question.
Okay.
If someone came to you and said, I'm going to Japan for a week, what should I do as a Reiki student? What would you advise them to do?
I would ask them why they were going to Japan and what it is they're looking for. And then if they said they were looking for more information, then there is plenty of information available there. I would suggest, I definitely would suggest going to Mount Karama and having a beautiful meditation on the mountain. I would recommend going to Asumi Sensei's memorial.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think they could get much from a deeper practice of Reiki in Japan in 1 week.
Right.
If they were looking for a deeper practice, it's available now pretty much anywhere in the world. You know, if they wanted to study the Japanese Reiki, they don't need to go to Japan to do that. In fact, Tadao Yamaguchi is, you know, traveling annually on both the West Coast and the East Coast and has annual classes that they wanted to study with him. Plus, he has taught probably, and he has teachers in Europe. I think I was the 100th teacher that he taught. I think that's the number on my scroll. So, there is opportunity that they could find outside of Japan. If all they're looking for is, you know, a nice experience to meditate on the mountain, and that's wonderful, and, you know, to see these sites. But in a week, there's not much else they could do.
Uh-huh. Okay, good. Thank you. My answer to that question, and I've been experimenting with this actually in my own little trips to Japan. And that is the one of the things that I feel is so such a treasure is the culture of Japan, and just to be able to eyes and ears open so that you see the difference of how people are there. And it brings, for me, it brings Mikao Usui more to life in the sense that they're able to see him not as a, you know, French person or a German person or an American or a Canadian, but they see him as a Japanese man.
Exactly.
And for me, that's huge.
That is huge.
So he
is not going to think the way they think.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, well, Lynn, thank you so much for this conversation. And we'll see how it all comes together. and I appreciate you following your Reiki path. It's wonderful.
Thank you. And a lot of it is because of you. If you hadn't trained my teacher, I probably wouldn't have met her. But who knows? You know, I think the universe wanted me to do this. So who knows where it would have gone.
Right. Well, it has gone where it has gone.
And I'm forever grateful that this is a huge part of my life.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
And thank you.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.